Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball and NBA at FanRag Sports and college hoops at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, Bulls writer at FanRag Sports and the host of the 312 podcast. Follow us on social media at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. And subscribe to the show, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you'll find us. Make sure to follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. Say what's up to us. Hit us up at our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Save that number in your phone as Locked On Bulls. Interact with us whenever you're listening to the show, wherever you're listening to the show. So today's going to be a little bit of a shorter episode. Obviously, no Bulls basketball until Friday. We have a back-to-back Friday and Saturday, Celtics and then the Nets. And then we round out the season with the Nets again on Monday and then the Pistons on Wednesday. So as we kind of close this out, Matt and I wanted to spend the first part of this episode talking about a couple more trades and maybe what the Bulls can do with these picks and some of the players that they currently have on their roster to try and improve maybe their draft stock in these two picks overall if they do end up somewhere between 8th and 9th. But Matt, what's going on? How are you? Decompressed a little bit since all the anger that maybe you felt with that Hornets win the other night.
Yeah, I've calmed down a bit. I was on the ledge after that win over Charlotte. I was inconsolable. It was just really frustrating. But now, you know, it's a new day. We're getting closer to the weekend. We got the Masters kicking off just about an hour or so ago. I'm excited. Excited to see if Tiger can make some noise this weekend. I love Masters weekend. It means spring is getting closer. Yeah, dude, let's do it. I'm down. Let's go.
So the first thing I want to talk about is the article that you wrote yesterday, and kind of plays off the idea of what we were talking about on yesterday's episode with the Bulls possibly being at 8 or 9 with their own pick and now having to find a way to sort of improve maybe that Pelicans pick or do something this summer to improve the quality of those two draft picks or trading up maybe in the lottery. You had an idea about the Bulls maybe having talks with maybe the 76ers.
But basically, I looked at it like this, and I'll preface it by saying that while this trade could certainly benefit both teams, I think it benefits the Bulls a little bit more. A couple of Sixers fans on Twitter after I put out that article yesterday said, like, dude, are you crazy? There's no way. But essentially it goes down like this. The Bulls send Justin Holiday, who still has another year and just $4.3 million left on that year for his salary next season, and the Pelicans pick to the 76ers, who in turn send their Lakers pick that they are owed to the Bulls. So essentially the Bulls bump up a few spots in the first round with that extra pick while keeping theirs. And the 76ers, who paid J.J. Redick $23 million this season and also brought in veteran and former Bull Marco Bellinelli with a short one-year contract after he was waived by Atlanta earlier this season, to essentially plug and play Justin Holiday as their starting two guard next season, as a reliable three-point shooter next season, because they are certainly gearing more towards being a perennial playoff contender, and where they're picking in the first round might not be as important to them as it is to the Bulls. So I looked at it as kind of a win-win, where in an ideal situation, the Pelicans actually sneak into the lottery. So instead of Philadelphia looking at it as sending away the Lakers pick, which, assuming nothing crazy happens, will be at 10, trading that for a pick, the Pelicans pick, which right now, say, would be at 18 or 19, the Pelicans pick sneaks into the lottery, so the Sixers are really only trading down from 10 to 14, so down four spots, and getting a very cheap, reliable veteran two-guard who would be cheaper than Redick, definitely, and is younger and more athletic and a better all-around player than Marco Bellinelli. The hang-ups there are presented by Philadelphia fans that they don't really need Holiday that badly. They don't think Holiday is worth that, as opposed when just talking about sacrificing, trading down. And another factor is that people probably know that the Bulls don't have a whole lot of leverage as far as dangling Holiday coming up to the draft, because he's not a part of their long-term plans. And, you know, the Bulls might be willing to just like take a second round pick for him, as opposed to moving up four spots in the first round. So maybe not exactly a perfect trade opportunity from the Sixers' perspective. But again, if it's only trading it on four spots as opposed to like eight or nine, if the Pelicans sneak into the lottery, I thought maybe it's feasible.
Yeah, that's interesting. And like, to me, isn't part of the leverage for Justin Holiday, though, even coming up to this season? I know he's only got 1 year left, but that contract's only, what, $4 or $5 million for a guy that's, I know he's not a world beater, but a guy that's a competent...
Yeah, it's 4.3.
He's a competent three-point shooter at $4.3 million. He's a long, lanky guard. He can play some of the three for you. He can be that sort of veteran on your team. He's cheap at cost controlled. I think another thing for Philadelphia to consider, too, is like this summer with whatever's going to go on with LeBron, we heard rumors that there's like three or four cities LeBron would be willing to go to, and Philadelphia is one of them. So if you're going to go out and spend big time money on somebody like LeBron, or actually have a play in LeBron, you're going to need cheap options as far as veterans. And at what point does Philadelphia say, all right, we're done stacking up young guys. We don't really have anywhere for these guys to play and develop. So now we need to start bringing in veterans to help fill out this roster. Like, where is that point? Like, if 76er fans are saying, no, you're crazy, then okay, well, you're going to wait another year, take another potential lottery pick. Where are you playing all of these guys? And I don't know. Maybe they think that they all can develop at once together, with some guys getting more limited minutes. But now it's like you have Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons, Markel Fultz is in the fold for this, and then you're going to add another draft pick to this. Like, I feel like they need to fill out the roster with young veterans, so maybe they just don't think Justin Holiday is the type of player that really moves the needle for them to move down four spots. But really, for the 76ers, it's four spots for a cheap option when you're talking about playing in the same field as LeBron this summer with a potential free agency move. So I don't know, a lot of things to think about, I think, for 76ers fans too as well.
Yeah, and then the other thing, I mean, you mentioned developing some of the young guys. So say Redick, who they paid $23 million for one season, this season goes, and so does Bellinelli. They do have two other guys, two young guys that can play the two that they drafted recently. They've got Timothy Luwawu, who they took in the late first round of 2016, and they also took Furkan Korkmaz in late first round of 2016. But both of those guys are pretty much shooting guards by nature, but neither of them have gotten a whole lot of opportunity to play this season, and Justin Holiday is certainly a more established, proven three-point shooter than either of those two guys are. So I guess it's a matter of what Philadelphia wants to do. If they see one or both of those guys as ready to take the next step, if both of the veterans, both the veteran shooting guards, Bellinelli and Redick, walk, then they maybe might not necessarily see a need to bring in a veteran two guard like Justin Holiday. So that's something else to consider that might prevent this trade from happening.
I think another trade too. So when I was reading over the 76ers trade from you, it got me kind of interested. And so I was starting to think about other teams that maybe would possibly make deals. And this one's in a little bit of a smaller capacity, but involves the same player. Like, the Clippers are a team that has said that they're trying to do this whole rebuild on the fly type of thing. They still have players to be competitive enough where they feel like that they can be still a competitive, possible playoff team. So I would say, like, maybe that Pelicans pick ends up at, what, I don't know, 14. If they end up swapping with Denver, it could be as low as 14. But even if you end up somewhere between 16 and 18, you go to the Clippers and you say, all right, depending on what DeAndre Jordan's going to do this summer, whether he decides to take that player option for $24 million or walk and see what he can get in free agency for a max contract, you could possibly shop Robin Lopez. Robin Lopez only has one more year on his deal. A lot of the players on the Clippers only have one more year on their deal. They're still trying to be competitive. He's a competent center that could be sort of their gap filler if DeAndre Jordan doesn't come back for the Clippers. Another option too is Justin Holiday. Like, he's a cheap wing that plays one more year. A lot of these guys that are on their team, like Tobias Harris and Milos Teodosic, who they just got Danilo Gallinari is still on their team for another 2 years. They just re-signed Lou Williams. So they're a team that's, while they still have two picks in this lottery coming up at the back half of the lottery, they're a team that's sort of trying to rebuild on the fly. So that's another team you could possibly talk about. But is it worth it at that point to just move up two spots? I don't know how that would do justice for the Bulls and whether or not the Clippers would really care, because right now they have back-to-back picks at the 12 and 13. So maybe a Clippers possible option there. Maybe if the Pelicans pick slides a little bit between 15 and 16, maybe they see a little bit of value in Robin Lopez, but I think that's going to be betting on whether or not DeAndre Jordan comes back.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly within the realm of at least possibility as far as something worth talking about. And then another one that might be intriguing is Boston, and you know you're probably saying, dude, whatever, like, Boston has all the pieces in the world, they don't need to be making any trades coming into this draft. But you know, Danny Ainge likes to shake things up, and I don't think anybody really expected him to be trading IT and rebuilding that team the way they did, and nobody really expected them to trade down when they were in position to take Markelle Fultz and instead taking Jason Tatum, which now, I mean, Fultz is making a comeback, but looks like that they won that trade as well. Another, I mean, Boston is trying to contend, but they don't really have any true twos that they trust right now. They've got a bunch of ones and a bunch of threes. And as far as what they might be willing to offer, they have, whose pick do they have in 20? They've got the Grizzlies pick in 2019. So, I mean, that, assuming that Memphis doesn't get their shit together next season, could be very valuable. It is protected 1 through 8, that Memphis pick. So you'd need Memphis to at least have a little bit of a step up next season. Maybe that's something that Boston would be willing to flirt with if they think, if they think that Memphis is going to stay in the basement anyway, at least be one of the worst 8 teams again next season, and they don't want to wait around for that pick to translate, they could be willing to send that pick over to the Bulls. Now, Justin Holiday's not worth that much, so the Bulls would have to send them more. But it's not trading up for the Bulls in this draft, but you know, nothing wrong with looking ahead to seeing how the Bulls can put themselves in great position for the first round in the 2019 draft, because the Bulls' second round picks this season and next season are already due to other teams. So for a rebuilding team, that's not great, and obviously what you want to do and what they've been focusing on with that Nico trade is putting together as many first round draft picks as possible. So, I mean, how highly does the Celtics front office value Justin Holiday, and would they be willing to throw away a pick for him? I'd say pretty unlikely, but maybe that there's at least a conversation that the Bulls can have there to see, all right, Boston, is there something on our roster that you like, or can we talk about picks, future picks, if you're willing to maybe send us that Memphis pick that you're owed in 2019?
It's a fair argument, because think about it. Memphis is not going to be sitting in the basement, I don't think, next year. You're going to get Mike Conley back. You're going to still have Chandler Parsons. You're going to have Marc Gasol still there. And then you're adding, what, a top two, potentially first overall pick to that lineup. I feel like top eight protected probably puts, like, with just that lineup alone, I feel like that might push you somewhere between 9 and 14, if not, like, somewhere at the low bottom, and that's just being kind of optimistic for the Grizzlies. But I mean, they still got talent on their team. This year, not so much. Like, a lot of guys have been shut down because of injuries, And the other night they threw out a lineup that I don't even think you could name one player off there. But next year I think it'll be a turnaround, especially if they add a top two pick this year.
Can't forget that they signed former Bulls draft bust Marquise Teague. I mean, what kind of shape is your roster in if you're actually paying that guy to play NBA basketball?
Oh,
my God.
Oh, jeez, that's true. All right, and one more thing, Matt, I wanted to get to, because I know we were going back and forth yesterday about this topic, about maybe if the Bulls end up at 8 or 9, they end up deciding to trade that Pelicans pick, say it stays at 18 right now or 19 where the Pelicans sit right now, and there's still some movement to be made after 4 games, but I had to go back because I wanted to look at the last 10 years of the draft and seeing what the trends were among those picks. Number 9 and number 18 as of yesterday, and then the win shares of number 5, 6, and 7. So this is, I felt like there's a number of different ways you could analyze this and see what the trends were and the overall players, but I feel like win shares is a good way, a good litmus test, at least to see whether or not the player's been durable, he's stayed in the league, and he's had some value to teams. And I was expecting going into this to be proven right, and the argument actually kind of turned around, and it was more so what you were talking about, saying that you can get more value at the number 9 and number 18 pick than maybe moving up to 5 or 6. So a couple names that stood out for me here, if you moved up to number 5 over the last 10 years, Kevin Love, Ricky Rubio, DeMarcus Cousins, Jonas Valanciunas were all taken at number 5. But the last 5 years, I've been looking over number 5 and number 6 picks, and they haven't been that good. And you look at some of the names that were taken there, there was a couple mistakes. The one gem that I did find, though, was that at the number 7, the trend overall is that there's high value at the number 7 pick. I don't know if it's the spot that they're at, but what Winshare is telling me, so over the course of the last 10 years, these are the players that were taken at number 7. Eric Gordon, 31 in win shares. Stephen Curry, 93.4. Greg Monroe at 47.9. Bismack Biyombo, Harrison Barnes, Ben McLemore, Julius Randle, Emmanuel Mudiay, Jamal Murray, and Lauri Markkanen. So going through a lot of these picks, I was kind of convinced the other way, Matt. I was convinced now, at least in this facet, if you're just looking at win shares and value of these players to their teams, there's more value at 9 and 18 than maybe moving up to number 5 or number 6 in this
so
draft.
So what you're saying, when we get around to it, is that I was right in our debate yesterday. That's what you're saying.
I guess
you're putting more
facet.
Value on two but first round picks, one at 7 through 9 and one in the teens, than you are at one at moving up a few spots from 7.
The one thing I will say is the trend over, so if you take it in a 10-year span, okay, there is more value there, but it gets a little bit troubling when you look at the last 5 years. So the last 5 years, you've got the two picks at 9 and 18 are as followed. Trey Burke and Shane Larkin in 2013, their overall win share is 11.5. 2014, Noah Vonleh and Tyler Ennis, a total of 6.1 over their combined seasons. Frank Kaminsky and Sam Decker, total of 13 in 2015. Jacob Poeltl and Henry Ellison, 6.3 total. And then Dennis Smith Jr. and TJ Leaf, which are a combined 0 this year. So the value there is obviously a little bit sketchy, and maybe that's just the quality of the draft classes. So you got to account for that too. But I mean, those first 5 years between 08 and 2012, you were getting players that are legitimate role players. And there's a couple guys that are inactive, like Ty Lawson, but for what Ty Lawson was early on in his career, he was really good for the Denver Nuggets. But you get value picks. DeMar DeRozan came out in the number 9 pick. Gordon Hayward, Kemba Walker, Andre Drummond. And then even at that number 18 pick, JaVale McGee, Ty Lawson, Eric Bledsoe, Terrence Jones. So there is some value at those picks. I was just a little bit more sketchy, a little bit more hesitant over the last 5 years because of some of those names. Yeah, they're playing in the NBA right now, but what kind of value does that really have overall to making your team more competitive?
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, look, it's all entirely subjective, and when you're talking about which guys taken where are, you know, contributing win shares, and win shares are fluky too, because a guy who is a high lottery pick or a mid-tier lottery pick who gets, you know, who goes to play for a bad team might have fewer win shares than a guy taken in the mid to late first round who goes to a good team and has good players around him, and because of that has a higher win share in his rookie season or his first couple of seasons. So that's something you have to take into consideration as well. And then as far as, you know, what it means for the Bulls coming into this draft and all the different ways you can look at it, I'm still pretty confidently saying to myself, I would much rather have this Bulls pick where it is now. Maybe they get lucky. You know, they still have, depending on where they are, somewhere between like a 7% and 12% chance at a top three pick in the lottery. But even if they don't, they'll still have a top 10 pick and another one, depending on where the Pelicans go, somewhere between 14 and 20. I mean, if they win out, maybe it's, you know, 22 or 23, which would not be great for the Bulls. But to me, like, as you're saying, you're rattling off some of the names of these guys who are taken in the mid to late part of the first round, and it's more valuable to have two chances at a first-round pick turning into a good-to-great player than one. And yes, you're more likely to find a star, borderline superstar in those top five picks, but it's better to double your chances, right? I mean, it's all about the numbers. It's doubling your chances at hitting on one of two first round picks as opposed to hoping that the one you have that's higher up pays off and becomes a superstar that we all think he has the potential.
I agree. I think looking over some more stats and just guys and where they were taken, especially the top five, borderline top five, you know, with that five or six pick. Funny to just go back to win shares. Of course, there are flukes with it too. There's a million other stats that you can compare some of these draft players to look at value. I just think for me, win shares, just as a quick look at something like what they value to a team, I think adding over their career just kind of gives you an understanding of longevity and if they were actually having an impact on their team. But you're right. Like, it's funny, I posted on our Locked On Bulls account on Twitter, at Locked On Bulls, the top 60 active players right now in win shares. And if you go through it, like, Jose Calderon's on here at 57.78 at number 40. So, like, while he had a really good career early on, like, he's bounced around from a bunch of different teams. Like, Josh Smith still is on here from his early days. So, it does have a little bit of a skewed bias, but overall, you can get a good idea of at least where they would stand and what kind of, at least a little bit of an impact on what they might have and where they might be projected over the course of the last couple seasons. But you're right, it's all objective, and it's one thing that we're all going to have to rely on heavily is that the Bulls scouting system rely in the Bulls scouting system, and they understand the players, and they've been watching them all season. So we've got to have, as much as it's hard for Bulls fans to think of this way, but you've got to have a little bit of faith in Gar Foreman and the drafts and the scouting system that they have in place. And also, maybe, I don't know, maybe this is where the Bulls, Doug Collins, is making his money, because this is where I think the most important part of his job comes in, if there is an important part at all to his job, is drafting and evaluating talent. So we'll see how that plays out. But I think I have to walk it back a little bit, though, Matt. I think you're right. There is value in maybe not drafting or moving up to a five or six spots and keeping that number 9 or number 18 pick with the Pelicans.
Boom. I win. Next topic.
All right, so let's get to our last topic of the show. You brought up a pretty good argument with who would be more likely, who do you want to see as a storyline more likely to come back and dominate? Is it Kawhi Leonard, Jimmy Butler, or Gordon Hayward? So you brought this topic up. I want to let you first touch on this. I've got an idea who I think would be an awesome storyline, but I'm interested to see, because these are three, like, really talked about players and three very interesting storylines in their own capacity. So, like, I'm curious to see, are you going Butler? Are you going the weirdness going on in San Antonio down with Kawhi Leonard? Or are you looking for the comeback story with Gordon Hayward?
Dude, it's so hard to pick. And I even forgot to mention Kyrie.
True.
But, you know, everybody's excited because of the video footage that Gordon Hayward put out on the Players Tribune just a few days ago of him jogging for the first time. And so now everybody's freaking out, like, oh my God, Brad Stevens has been saying this whole time he's not coming back. But maybe, look at this video footage of him jogging lightly. So that's why everybody's freaking out about Hayward. And Kyrie, in his own right, when it was, I think it was around March 24th when they said the timeline was 3 to 6 weeks, and we got the playoffs starting in just about a week. So if you look 3 weeks out, would be April 14th, Saturday, so a week from this Saturday when the playoffs are underway, first round, and then 3 more weeks after that would be Cinco de Mayo weekend, first weekend in May. So if the Celtics are still in it at that point, which is certainly feasible, even at the back end of that timeline, he could come back and they'd still be in it. So, I mean, obviously, as far as playoff implications and who's coming out of each conference, I feel like Boston, if Kyrie and or Hayward come back and the rest of those little nagging injuries the Celtics have been dealing with, you know, get healthy, that has the biggest implication, because then all of a sudden you look at them and saying, if they're healthy and they get Kyrie and or Hayward back, they can beat Toronto, they can beat Cleveland. As far as just like the wild card, to me, it's like, no disrespect to Jimmy, and I hope he comes back and Minnesota stays in this playoff, makes it to the playoffs, because that franchise has been hungry for a return to the playoffs for a long time, and it would be great to see Jimmy come back and lead him in an exciting series. But to me, the wild card is Kawhi, right? With all the drama going on in San Antonio, which has almost always been for the last 20 years the model of consistency as far as players getting along with coaches, getting along with front office, everybody's on board, it's a team sport. The drama is crazy. And honestly, if you put Kawhi back in, if he is healthy and decides, all right, you know what, I'm a little bit scared of, you know, re-injuring this because I'm right on the cusp of a super max deal and I don't want to risk that, but we've got ourselves a chance here. San Antonio has been playing well down the stretch. They had a little bit of a lull in, you know, like February, early March, but they've been playing well. LaMarcus Aldridge is playing well. Pau Gasol at age $40 million is still doing his thing. They got a nice young core of pieces around them. They've got Patty Mills. They've got DeJounte Murray. They got Tony Parker and Ginobili doing their thing. And they're looking at a first-round matchup with maybe Utah, who in their own right, since Gobert has come back, have been playing very well. But maybe Utah, maybe OKC. I think if you put a healthy Kawhi back on that Spurs roster, they can make a run all the way to the conference finals. So to me, that's the most intriguing one as far as who might come back and make an impact on these playoffs.
See, I'm going to go the complete opposite. I think you touched on two of them, but you left the Butler story out. And I think while there's still some fluidity of where the Timberwolves could end up, like, they're only a game out of the fourth seed right now in the Western Conference playoffs with, what, 3-4 games left to play. They're a game back behind the Jazz. The Spurs are within a half game there. The Thunder are within a half game there. Timberwolves, Pelicans are both a game back from the Jazz at that fourth spot. And the Nuggets are a game back from the Pelicans and the Timberwolves. So a lot of movement could be still left to be moved. But, like, if everything was set in stone and the playoffs started today, the Timberwolves would be going up against the Warriors. And I think that storyline's crazy.
I mean, no disrespect to Jimmy and Tibbs, but that's a 5-game series, isn't it?
Like, if Steph Curry doesn't play...
Okay, sure.
That's an intriguing matchup. Like, you have a player in Jimmy Butler who could take over, and I'm interested to see if he comes back hungry. And if there's no Steph Curry on that Warriors team, I get it. They still have Draymond Green in his prime. They still got Kevin Durant in his prime. They still have Klay Thompson if Klay Thompson's available and healthy. There's still 3 weapons on that team. But without Steph Curry, like, they could run into some problems. Obviously, we're talking about a really great Warriors team with 3 of the best players out of the top 20. But I'm still interested. Like, if Butler came back and made it interesting, I think it would be fun to watch. But I think you're right. I don't know if Kawhi's going to come back. I honestly don't, especially with the rumors of teams circling the Spurs and maybe a potential trade being put out there. Maybe Kawhi doesn't want to...
Well, just because teams are circling doesn't mean that San Antonio is going to
listen. Right, but thinking about it in this way, it was like, Kawhi maybe doesn't want to risk his big payout. Like, what does he have, 1 more year left on his deal, and doesn't want to risk a re-injury in a playoff where maybe he's thinking about getting out after this, like, during this summer. So a lot of things to think about. I think a really cool story, though, is the Gordon Hayward situation, and maybe if Kyrie comes back, that Eastern Conference playoffs is going to be weird, especially if the Celtics have to go into it without both of those guys to start. But interesting, all 3 storylines are crazy, but I think I'm picking the Butler one if he does come back and there's no Steph Curry for the first round. Like, that's going to be a big talked about matchup. So I don't know. It would be cool to see Butler in a new situation for the first year underneath Tom Thibodeau and maybe see him light it up against one of the best teams in the NBA and three of the top 20 players in the league. So definitely rooting for that story. But I agree, like, it's hard to pick between all three of these stories. I think it's 1A, 1B, 1C when you're talking about all three of these storylines going to the playoffs.
Yeah, and it's just great that we have this many storylines coming into another year when at the start of this 2017-18 season, everybody said, like, you know, even with the drama of the Kyrie for IT trade, it was like, all right, well, it's probably still going to be LeBron, assuming the Cleveland, you know, team has enough for him to carry them, and it's going to be Cavs and Warriors again. Now, that's certainly not a given. Toronto has looked pretty lousy recently, although they did just beat up on the Celtics last night, which, you know, probably boosted their confidence back. Toronto, unless, you know, they lose out and Boston wins out, Toronto's still going to be the one seed. But now, so you have a one seed that's looked certainly beatable. They haven't looked great in their last two games against Cleveland. Cleveland, meanwhile, have been up and down since the total overhaul of their roster at the deadline. You got, you know, young up-and-coming teams with, you know, stars in Philadelphia, Oladipo leading the Pacers. Miami Heat are going to be an interesting first-round matchup. You got Giannis and the Bucks trying to make some noise. Like, there's plenty of storylines everywhere, and I'm just glad that the, you know, the Goliath of the Warriors are a question mark with all of the key players that they have trying to get through injuries at the last second. You got James Harden leading the one-seed Rockets that have looked, from start to finish, the best team in the league all season, but Harden, to this point, is a notorious playoff choker. Chris Paul, to this point, is a notorious playoff choker. So, I mean, there's no ending to all of these various storylines coming into the playoffs, and as a Bulls fan who's had to watch, you know, close to 80 games now of just hot garbage on a night-in, night-out basis, I'm just so excited, I'm sure you are too, Jordan, to finally get to this juicy part of the NBA schedule.
Yeah, so if you're a little bit disappointed with the season wrapping up, or maybe you're excited that you don't have to watch a rebuilding team, and maybe this has hurt your love for the NBA, let that be rejuvenated by the playoffs this year, because like you said, plenty of storylines for the Bulls, not only like implications in terms of looking at what teams are rising, 76ers, Pacers, but also whether or not, I think that's the most interesting storyline too, is like Rockets, two potential chokers, one having a phenomenal year in James Harden, Chris Paul, first year with the Rockets. That's a huge storyline too. I think a lot of people forget about is those two being paired, being the best team in the Western Conference, best team in the NBA, and also notorious for not being able to get out of the second round, third round of the playoffs and just completely ghosting it. So definitely some definite interesting storylines coming up in the next few weeks. But that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Remember, we're doing a giveaway on social media at Locked On Bulls on Twitter, on our Facebook page, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. All you have to do is leave us a review at your favorite podcast provider, whether that's iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, wherever it is. Leave us a review. It takes 30 seconds. Screenshot that review and send it to LockedOnBulls@gmail.com. You'll be automatically entered to win Joakim Noah autographed 16x20 photo. So we've had a bunch of entries already, so thank you for everybody who's already entered. It's a really cool giveaway, and it's something that you're definitely going to want, so it takes about a minute of your time. There's a video on our social media pages if you don't exactly know where to go on iTunes or how to leave a review from your phone. It's real quick and easy. We've got a video up on our social media feed. Remember, we're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Follow us on social media at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls_Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure you're following the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. For Matt Peck and Jordan Malley, we are out, Bulls Nation. Have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow to lead you into the weekend. We are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.